All right. So, Mr. Richard,
yes.
Would you like to introduce... This is a guest episode.
Yeah, it's been forever.
It has been a minute. I'm
tired of hearing the sound of my own voice.
So, would you like to explain a little bit more about who our guest is for the awesome, gentle listener? I was going to say... I don't know. Awesome was such a weak recall there. I wanted to say gentle listeners because I've been listening to this podcast recently where the guy always says, welcome, gentle listeners.
The awesome, at the beginning. Gentle listeners. That's a terrible. That's like a complete, like, up and then down.
I know. And I felt like it was a better. It was better to explain that I said that rather than just assume that was the thing that I actually intended to say.
Yeah.
So, anyways.
So, it's
I digress.
Like you kind of stole it.
Yeah. And my hatred for these intros just continues to rise. So, why don't you take it over?
Well, this week's guest is an old comedy friend of mine, Sydney Gant. I've known Sydney essentially since I started comedy. But some of you might recognize Sydney from a recent video the two of us did called Did We Fix It? Now, for those of you listeners at home, if you've been following the show for some time, you may know that I don't drink all the time, but when I do, I drink.
Hey now, I can attest to this. As someone who also put that drinking practice into practice, I can say that you are a fellow practitioner.
Yes. Particularly, there are instances where when I drink, when I drink on an empty stomach, I think it's going to be exactly the same as when I have food in my stomach. Not the case. During one such instance, and I don't want to bog down the explanation too much, Sydney and I came at odds with each other at an open mic, which almost resulted in a fight, and then later resulted in a grappling match in the park by my house, which you can see on Sydney's video, Did We Fix It, which is a series that Sydney is starting. You can find it on YouTube. You can also listen to Sydney's podcast, which he does with his wife Ainsley, called Two Jacked Bros, because they both are that. Just two jacked bros.
There you go.
Raising kids.
And the question remains, Richard, did you fix it? I guess you'll have to
You would have to watch
out.
The video to see how that happened. And edit out that part where I started to talk and that part there.
No, I like it better when we keep in the times when we say edit that out and then
it's
makes
still.
It seem more relatable.
It was like half a breath that almost got out, so it works.
Okay.
This is a really fun episode that we got to record today. Talked a little bit about Sydney, talked a little bit about Conor Khabib, and talk a little bit about just life in general.
Philosophized, if you would.
We were philosophized.
We did. We philosophized quite a lot here in the dojo today. So it's just funny because we literally just had an off microphone conversation as to how we don't actually use that adage anymore.
I thought that was on mic.
What's up? What's it?
Are we going to use the dojo thing or not? I think we need to decide that.
I mean, I'm not. I don't hate it.
I don't hate it either, but like it feels like we shoehorned it in late.
Yeah.
And I feel like it should have been there to begin with, but it's on the Instagram. So like it's still.
Well, you know what? If it's on the Instagram, it's definitely accurate. It has to happen. That is how, you know, the truest essence of life is gleaned from Instagram, Richard.
Ah, what was I thinking?
So
that's where the world lives.
Anyways, who the fuck cares if we call it the dojo or not? This is a great episode. Sydney was a awesome guest. The philosophizing cannot be understated here. It was it was deep. Shit got deep.
Yes, it did.
And he is a master of getting deep.
Oh yes.
And the mastery topic will come up again later on in this recording. So
definitely got his stripe. He's gotten his stripes.
He's got a couple of stripes. We'll give him a couple of stripes. Not giving him his blue belt.
No.
Because no one. Gets
we don't
the fucking
do that
blue
shit
belt.
Here.
There's no goddamn. There's more. Hey man, you get enough fucking stripes. Eventually, it's going to be, well, I guess we don't give black stripes.
We just give you a new belt. Like, yeah. There's so many stripes just that it's all white again.
A cleaner shade of white. It goes, like, you start off with, like, a kind of, like, a yellowed, maybe, like, a like a cream belt.
Yeah, it's a like, a off-white.
Yeah.
And then we go all the way back to eggshell.
Yeah, we get, like, translucent.
Ooh.
So white, you can't even see it.
No belt.
All right.
Enjoy.
On to the interview.
We'll be right back. Okay. Wait, was I not on?
So we, yeah.
Now you're coming in beautiful.
That, so I was like, that was yeah, me coming that in was your mics. Yeah.
Peripheral so sounds.
Now? Am I too hot now?
No, you're fine, man.
Are you sure?
So yeah, actually, okay, you're the reverse. You actually have a very powerful microphone voice that we
gotcha
referenced.
Yeah. All right. Cool.
Word. Okay.
All right.
Well, are we going to introduce ourselves with our brand new sponsor?
Sure.
Yeah. This episode of White Belts in Life is brought to you by the Welby Sock Assist. Let's explain this item, Corey. This is your purchase at Aldi.
So it appears as if the Sock Assist is a really effective way to put on your socks that's actually more complicated than simply bending down and putting your socks on. So if you're interested in such a thing, you can get one at Aldi in the Finds aisle for $7.99.
It's kind of got like a weird, like, it almost, if you look at the back of it, it looks like somebody took a bunch of other items and just took them apart to make this.
Isn't
like you've got kind of like this like squeegee brush thing at the top, which I guess is like to line it up. And then you have like that's the, what I love is the, at, you can actually like spread the sock over the kind of tube here.
Isn't
have you tried it yet?
I have not. I'm actually,
I feel like you could use that. I feel like if you were like, if you put it on and you were like, oh, I'm not gonna, it works, but I'm not gonna use it ever.
Yeah.
You could like wrap hoagies with it.
You know? You could like get like a Subway style wrap.
Yeah, I feel like there's a lot of things you can still do with that.
This is like, it's just a very good multi-tool to have. Maybe not best for putting on socks.
Yeah, but here's the thing about like
instant kumite. You just like stick your hands in there. Just
like the very idea of an invention, like the scientific process, right? Like there has to be a problem that needs to be solved. But yeah, I don't see that as any way streamlining the process of putting your socks on.
Well, it depends.
No.
I mean, you're,
but I mean,
you're an able-bodied human. If you were 300 pounds, 300 plus, I mean, when you, whatever that weight is when you stop being able to see your genitals.
Yeah.
I think it also is probably hard to put on socks.
Yeah.
So there's a large percentage of the population for whom that is spot on.
Yeah.
And once below the waist becomes tricky, that's where that's where the Sock Assist comes in handy. The Sock Assist also works as a shoe horn, I believe. It help remove your socks. I saw something about helps put on your shoes too. Oh, that's so that you can actually use that hook end. So you get a shoe horn with the Sock Assist, which is pretty. It's a multi-tool.
That only makes sense.
It's a one-stop shop, man. It's the your lower body problems solved.
Yes.
With one simple piece of equipment.
And I guarantee fat people are doing something with a sandwich. With that I guarantee it. Guarantee
well,
it.
We just gave them the idea. They get the hoagie wrap with it.
But we did not give them that idea. that's one thing that we you fail to realize about fat people is they're like their life revolves around the fact that they're fat.
Yeah.
So their creativity is completely inspired by fatness.
Yeah.
You think about it, like, look at their center of gravity. They don't have a normal center of gravity. You don't see fat people just laying all over the ground. They're staying up somehow. They're figuring out ways to stay up all day long, you know? So it's, I'm impressed by fat people. I'm very impressed.
Everything is geared towards, like, accommodating that way of life.
Yeah.
As opposed to.
I got up to, like, 275 pounds once. And so I'm around 180, 190-ish.
Jeez, so you're sub 95. You've shed 95 pounds from that point.
Yeah.
From that is impressive.
I mean, but like I wasn't fat before that. It was like I wanted to try it out.
Let's see what this fat thing's all about.
Yeah, it was. It was the lifestyle I was trying out because I was an athlete my whole entire life. So from as long as I can remember, I was doing something athletic. Or if I wasn't in a sport, like I was forced to do. Like, you know, my mom was making me do athletic stuff, my dad had me do it. So it was like it was after college I bragged about it too, like all like senior year. I was like, oh, I can't wait to graduate, I'm getting so fucking fat, you know, I just can't wait, it's gonna be, I'm so excited. And then the first year, so I literally went from being like a 155 pound high jumper. There were times when my then girlfriend, now mother of my children, is I weighed more than her, and she was a lacrosse athlete. Like, she wasn't fat by any means, but because of what I did and the way I needed to keep my weight down, so I was a light dude. Mm-hmm. And within not even a full year, I was up to 275 pounds. Like, I was up 120 pounds.
Wow. What was your damage doer? What was your go-to snack?
I think the whole entire routine was the issue.
Yeah.
So I got big in, we moved to Dallas. Well, okay. We lived in a place called Euless, which is halfway between Dallas and Fort Worth.
Gotcha. Right?
Small town. Everybody calls it Useless Texas. Like, that's like the nickname for it down there. So Euless is where we lived. We lived in walking distance from an area where there was like a Jack in the Box, and across the street from that was a Sonic, and then down the street from that was a Taco Bueno.
Oh, boy.
Across the street from that was a Whataburger. Like, a little bit down from that was a Checkers, but we had money. We didn't go to Checkers. So it was, and then there was like all sorts of like unique fast food restaurants that we didn't really have up here. So I would go to whatever, no matter what I was eating, whether I was like breakfast, lunch, or dinner, I would always stop at Jack in the Box first because they serve 24-hour breakfast sandwiches.
Nice.
So I would just get in that. That would be my appetizer.
Yeah.
So I would start at Jack in the Box and then go over to Sonic, get something. And because Sonic always had like deals and like cool. So it was like appetizer and then a starter. I called it my Sonic starter. So we get like a hot dog, or they had like a grilled cheeseburger. It was like a tiny one.
Yeah.
It was like a melt. It was a patty melt.
Gotcha.
Like, no frills. And so I'd get either a hot dog or that, and then I'd get whatever my meal was.
It's funny because I remember a method I read about, because I grew up on, like, I was into lifting weights big time now, of course, but also growing up, that was like the first thing I was actually good at. So I gravitated towards it. I remember reading like a weight loss protocol where someone's like, every time before you eat, down a protein shake. So you're filled up, you're a little bit satiated, and hopefully you'll eat less. So you've just revealed a different method.
Yeah.
If you're trying to gain weight, eat something hyper palatable so that you can then eat more hyper palatable food.
Down a breakfast sandwich. Yeah. Start with a breakfast sandwich. Always. That's tattooed on my back, actually.
There you go.
There
you
breakfast go. Sandwich.
No, it was because I honestly, and it wasn't that I was necessarily putting in more calories than I was before. Definitely putting in trashier calories.
Yeah.
You know, but it was the lack of working out.
Yeah.
Which was... Yeah. It happened quick, man. Because, and again, I wasn't like I was the type of, you know, I was like hyper metabolic.
Yeah.
I was just working out my whole entire life. I could eat a whole pizza by myself and just keep it moving, you know. But it was the not working out and just crushing it, man.
Yeah.
Just crushing it.
We put that energy into going from spot to spot.
Yeah.
It sounds like there was no break in between. Just eat and then go to the next one.
About the thinking about like how you're. I just thought about this. How when you're fat, you start to get really creative. So I would go make sure I always went to Jack in the Box at a time when, because it was like they were right across the street. Jack in the Box and Sonic Raider, but there were two lane like roads that had two lanes in them apiece.
Okay,
right?
Gotcha.
So it was really difficult to get directly across the street unless you timed it at the right time of day. So there was like a window before lunch. There was like a window before dinner. You know, there's a window before every meal where you could just like go right across the street.
Yeah.
If not, you'd have to go turn right, go all the way down the block, and, you know, make a whole big deal of it. So, it was like, you know, and you start to do stuff like that. And you start to get, like, I would find myself, if I wasn't able to get to like Jack in the Box in my window, I would get frustrated. I would feel like beforehand, like in my house, if like Ansley was like, my wife was like taking long talking to me about something or whatever, hurry the fuck up, I need to, there's a window. Like, I'm going to be able to just drive across the street. I can't listen to you explain to me how our life works, you know?
I'm just picturing that, like, as you're sitting in line, like, waiting for the next car ahead of you, just, like, watching the clock, like, come on, man. Come on, fucking minivan.
Yeah, they were all doing the same thing. Texas is where you go to become professionally fat.
Yeah. So the same people in line ahead of you were in line ahead of you at the next one.
I learned that technique from, there was a Blockbuster video that was in that town as well.
Yeah.
And I would go to Blockbuster and somebody noticed me, you know, from like the different fast food places. She ended up being my weed person too.
Yeah.
And then she explained to me how to like these windows you got to find. Yeah. So it was, it was a professionally fat Texas. Go there.
I would just like to be a fly on the wall the first time you had to explain exactly what you explained to us just now to your wife. You're like, no, you don't get it. This is a window of time, pre and post meal. I could get directly there. Otherwise, I'm going to have to circumvent.
Yeah, see, my method of teaching isn't for something like that. I don't explain. I just like, you know, show her the first time and like, this is my life. This is who I am.
I'm just about efficiency. That's all you're trying to
do.
Well,
she knows that about me, though. She knows how I love, because you know, some people say, like, I'm not anal about it at all. Like, but I just love it. I love being able to like set up a system of efficiency and incorporate that into my life.
That's a good, like, when you have that flow going from one thing into the next, like, it makes it a lot easier. Like, you're getting ready to head out the door. You've got your sock assist ready to go. You load it up the night before. Nice.
Yeah. Then, I would like tumble roll into the sock assist.
Well, Rick was telling
one
me.
One leg dip in. Yeah. You have two of them set up, so you got one on either side.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is that what you enjoyed about grappling? Kind of like taking that like systems sort of approach to it, and this can lead to this and this. And now, like also too, is that now, let's back up for a second. Your experience in grappling is primarily in judo, right? Do you have any jiu-jitsu experience?
Yeah. I mean, I would, so training-wise, judo. Like training-wise, judo, but just even in judo, I was always a little more excited to get to the ground.
Yeah.
You know,
gotcha.
Jiu-jitsu wasn't as available to me in a way when I was a kid that it would have inspired me to do, jiu-jitsu. Yeah, it was, I don't know if I said the wrong. But there was no inspiration for jiu-jitsu other than like the amount of jiu-jitsu that, for Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
Gotcha.
So it was just what, you know, quick get an arm bar, quick get out, quick, you know, whatever. But I love that the grappling transition.
Yeah.
I was obsessed with it. So
hierarchy of position, so to speak.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And I didn't for whatever reason, I didn't take to like high school wrestling. Well, I was mostly doing track and stuff. It just, there were no girls there, to be honest. Yeah. That's what it was. Like, I just thought that out. I just realized that. I mean, it was, yeah, there were no, so, and then, so my wife is a blue belt in jiu-jitsu and she competes now. And so a lot of my training has come from her.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
I recognized with you when you were talking about kind of taking that like systems approach thing. Because that's actually, even in what we do, like I manage a personal training department and I feel like, you know, I dislike a lot of things about the job, but one of the things I definitely do like is they allowed me the creative freedom to sort of construct my own system as to how to do things and how to plug holes, so to speak. And there are a lot of holes to plug in our particular ship that we work on.
Just a little bit. But, get some duct tape in there.
Yeah.
Okay. You got it.
Yeah, but dude, systems are hard. I mean, like even that, like, so I have definitely, so judo, like, got me obsessed with leverage first. Like, that's the first thing that I was ever obsessed with.
Yeah.
And then you watch leverage work, you know, you see that, you know, you need the next step, and then you need the next step, and then so then you end up with a system, right?
Yep.
So I do enjoy systems, but I also recognize that they're not perpetual motion machines.
Yeah.
They need maintenance. Like there's not any system that you can just leave unto itself and then everything will just work smoothly.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the first thing I was able, and since I, you know, the people that I had around me when I was young and teaching me judo was like, it was very fundamental oriented and very like, encounter, like head on, encounter the problem. Don't hide from, don't try to trick your way out of the problem. Yeah. So I don't mind that part too. Like the maintenance of the system is just as important to me because there's a system involved with that. Like there's a system for maintaining the system, you know? So when I grapple, so my grappling system is very tedious. It's just constant pressure no matter the position I'm in. So even if I'm on the bottom, I'm pressuring up. And the reason why I'm doing that is because, so for any change in motion, any disbalance that happens with my opponent, I don't have to think about it. My body automatically takes it.
Gotcha.
See, so it's like
water moving downhill.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm. It's exactly. So that, I mean, it's tedious. It's very excruciating on the body. You know what I mean? It's like, it's a lot of effort, but you build a stamina for that, you know, but it's like, and that's what I do on my feet. Like that's everything, like, from judo to the ground. Everything is just constant. Like, I'm not moving into position that you're not giving me.
Gotcha. You
know? Yeah.
It's, yeah.
Judo's having a little bit of a resurgence now, too, because I think we saw early on in the UFC, jiu-jitsu was such an advantage, but then we saw the influx of wrestlers who were, you know, these guys were black belts on the ground, but how the hell are you going to get them there? And these wrestlers were shutting down the ground game, and their jiu-jitsu kind of became nullified. So a lot of these jiu-jitsu academies, obviously, they can't really offer wrestling, at least most of them can't. Yeah. It's kind of a weird thing about wrestling, in fact, is that it's not really commercially available. Really, it's only available within the education system, which is kind of odd. But I mean, even the jiu-jitsu school that I go to, I've seen judo programs being added pretty frequently because that's their answer to how the hell are we going to get these on the ground so we can then use these jiu-jitsu techniques we've spent the last 50 years trying to hone and develop and whatnot.
Well, I mean, jiu-jitsu was a component of judo, or it's just rather. I mean, all of them are components of bushido. You know what I mean? They're all part of the same system anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right?
So, yeah, it's like, how do you effectively kill somebody and then go home to your family like nothing happened?
Yeah. Like,
that's really what it is, you know?
That's where that came from.
Yeah.
They split it up with Kano and all that. Like, that's when he kind of made the differences, but it was all the same thing. Yeah. It's just whatever school you went to decided to call it this.
Yeah, Aikido.
Like a regional kind of thing.
I think the one thing I would say about judo, I've been interested in getting into it for a long time, but just something you'll come to know about me and Rick will constantly kind of joust me for is my history of head injuries.
Yeah.
that's the one thing that's always kind of frightened me a bit about judo. It's just all that throwing, man. I just know that one of those days I'm gonna split the egg one more time, and you never know
when. Yeah, I'd be more concerned about shoulder and clavicle injuries and shit. Like, your head is, I mean, if you have any semblance of a break fall at all, your head is not gonna be the issue.
Yeah,
it's just not,
unless I really make a mistake
or unless they were really fast.
Yeah,
you know what I
mean? Like, you would have to, it would be like blinding speed, like one of those, like, next second you're feeling contact.
You know
what I mean, it's like I couldn't imagine something, because and a lot of the throws curl you up under them anyway in a way that you have to deliberately, I have to make a decision to put you on your head. You know, it's not
designed to put me there.
It's a lot more, like, from my limited judo experience, a lot more arm drags and a lot more, like,
some things are designed to put you on your head.
Yeah.
Like, without a doubt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely something. But you still have to make an effort to have that. Especially with somebody who's also trained in judo, who's also defending with judo defense.
Yeah.
You're not just, you know, it's like when you start training in judo, you're not going to, like, be sitting up against the wall waiting for class to start and then somebody's going to flip you.
Yeah.
You know, I love it. I love seeing how judo is making a
comeback.
I would say a surgeance. It's not even a comeback. Like, where was it? When was
Yeah.
You know, it was never. I mean, I remember coming home with like my gi and stuff on, and everybody just called it karate pants. Karate clothes. You know, it was judo. People didn't even know what judo was. So it was like, oh, you go and wrestle in those pajamas? It's like, yeah. There's that too. So. Yeah, it's good to see.
Yeah.
I like it. It's fun.
Also, too, I think that, you know, we've been really critical constantly of the gi, you know, because I grew up being a fan of MMA before I was a fan of any of the actual individual martial arts that it's comprised of. So I was always just like, what the fuck are we wearing? Like, this is stupid. I don't have no interest in this. But as I've gotten to, you know, become more accustomed to the sport and now actually having in-person experience with the sport, now I understand that really I think John Donaher actually, I mean, leave it to him to kind of, you know, very quickly summarize something about jiu-jitsu, but he described it as primary function is friction, just to slow down
the two opponents and to create more friction and slow down the transitions from position to position. So that hierarchy of positions, you can't go from step one to step five anymore.
Yeah.
It makes you go from step one, then to step two, three, four, finally through five. And that's something, you know, I think judo brought to jiu-jitsu is kind of like that same idea where you don't see any no-gi judo because it's about forcing the person to go through steps one through four and not just jump right then to five.
Yeah.
And I
don't mind the gi. And I don't see it as impractical either. I feel like I don't care what you are wearing. I don't care if it was a wife beater. I can, that will be your gi.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
I'll choke you with that.
Yeah.
I will choke you to death with your wife beater.
no matter how many times I have to rip it and tie it back around your neck.
Dude, I guarantee you won't get ripped. It won't get ripped. As a matter of fact, I'll choke you with your wife beater. I won't even stretch it out. But no, I just feel like anything somebody's wearing, you can, and also anything I'm wearing is a weapon. So, you know, if I'm wearing a wife beater, it's like, you know, go ahead, take the time to try to choke me with my wife beater, and then I'll just rip your arm off. You know, whatever, you know, whatever. When you're just willing to adapt your anything into anything, when it's not about whether or not it's a gi, it's about whether or not it's available.
Yeah.
Something available.
It's a factor to consider.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So I know how to consider that factor. And like, we walk around with clothes on most of the time.
Yeah.
You know, it's like how often, like what it's like a niche situation where you're fighting somebody, especially in a self-defense situation, where you both have your shirts off.
Yeah. Unless you're in a really, if you're fighting somebody who's naked, you have made several mistakes prior to arriving at that point.
Yeah. And put on a wife beater.
Well, at the very least.
You know, I'm still a white belt in jiu-jitsu, so I noticed very quickly that as I started going to more classes, when I would go to like the gi classes, I would suck. Like, I would leave almost like wanting to quit jiu-jitsu. I felt so inept. But then when I went to no-gi classes, you know, I'm a former football player. I've lifted weights my entire life. I've got some degree of athleticism. So I noticed I was able to fare much, much better in the no-gi classes. And at first, that made me gravitate towards no-gi. But then I realized the reasons I was having success was because I was just kind of, I was just sliding into positions I had no business. I hadn't earned these transitions. I was just heavy enough, strong enough, and slippery enough, frankly, that I was able to get into this position and fool myself into believing, oh, I passed this guy's guard, where in reality, no, you didn't. You just kind of fatted on him.
Well, if you're past the guard, you pass the guard. I mean, that's like, there's no rules. I mean, it's like, there's, again, like, jiu-jitsu is a system, but if you can just flop onto somebody and get those positions, by all, Godspeed. You know what I mean?
Like, good Lord. Good work. Do you find that as your... Are you a UFC guy?
I am. Yeah. I am.
Now, that's what's tough, is that are all of our bastions of judo representatives in the UFC have gone on. Parisian's done. He was done too early. I loved Carl Parisian, though.
Yeah, but he never really wanted to be... I mean, and that's the thing. It's like, people get pigeonholed in the UFC, and that kind of makes it tough because, yeah, he had a world-class judo background, but I don't think there was any iota of him as a fighter that wanted to use judo.
Yeah.
It was the weirdest thing to watch. I mean, like, early on, I remember you can see it happen in a fighter. It was like the first time he knocked somebody down with a punch.
Yeah.
He was done with judo. It was over.
Cool.
Yeah. So it's like, he's moved on, and then
Rousey, of course.
No.
Same drill, though. I mean, actually, I guess she's really didn't fall into the trap that we're describing here until later on in her career.
Yeah.
But earlier, when she had success, it was because she was just using her judo to dominate these women.
No.
Yeah. Well, Khabib Nurmagomedov is a black belt in judo.
Nice.
There we go. Yeah.
Black belt in judo, sambo, and anything that involves face smashing.
Sambo is really combat judo into combat jiu-jitsu.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, so... Yeah, him and his father are both black belts in judo. And then there's like one of the two freaks, the new freaks. Like, one is like a Greco-Roman wrestling background, and the other is a judo background.
Romero.
Yes.
That's, yes. Yeah, he does have a judo background.
Yeah. So it's like, it's there. Yeah. You know, it's there. And then there's like, you see it with the other, the Dakistani dude, the tall one, the young, the lightweight.
That was Zabit.
Yeah, Zabit. He's got a black belt in judo. And then there are a lot. But the thing is, for fighting, judo isn't like the technique. It's an element.
Yeah.
It's an element of fighting. It's not like how you would fight somebody.
Yeah.
You know? So you're seeing it used that way.
Yep.
You know, it's kind of like in that transition, in the transition between striking and grappling is judo.
Yes.
And yes. Zabit is like, I think he's the best with it so far.
He's fun to watch, man. He's going to make a push, but I think they fucked up in not putting him on the same card as Khabib. He actually just fought, I think, last weekend.
He did.
But that would have been a perfect opportunity for them to kind of showcase this other monster from Dagestan.
Yeah, because he's cool because he uses trips.
Yeah.
Like, you don't see people use trips. It's ridiculous. It's like, why not? Why not get them down in a way where they're not also punching you in the face? You know, why do you have to get that close if you can? Yeah.
You make an interesting point, though, in kind of like how it's one element. I think we're seeing that MMA in and of itself is becoming a martial art. Because even think of Muay Thai. I mean, Muay Thai is usually the base of 99% of strikers, you know, standing game. But we're not seeing a lot of clinch. We're not seeing a lot of full plums. We're not seeing a lot of umbrella clinches and sweeps from the clinch and all this sort of stuff. We're kind of just seeing MMA. It's kind of like, you know, with the NFL, they always say, like, there's a certain way that NFL offense is run. So it doesn't matter what you ran in college. It doesn't matter if you're air raid or the spread or what have you. When you come to the NFL, this is the way we do things. Yeah. I think we're kind of seeing that with MMA. Like, this, there's a certain orthodoxy now to MMA. And we're seeing a lot of that more extreme elements of the arts disappear. Fortunately or unfortunately, I'm not sure. But we're seeing kind of like a standard set of MMA skills rise to the top.
I agree with that, but I feel like if that occurs, then having the specialties are going to start to matter a little more, because if you can't take Stephen Wonderboy Thompson down, then the fact that he is a specialist on the feet kind of matters more.
Yeah.
Right. Absolutely. So if you can't take Connor down, that's an issue.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, so it's, I agree with you 100% that, but I think that kind of has to go. It's like, you have to raise everybody up to the level of the Matrix first.
Yeah.
Before you can have us specialize. And then now we can see what, like technically, even though we haven't seen it, we could have like a wushu fighter up in there.
Yeah.
You know, if you can't take him down.
Yeah,
you know, it's Yair Rodriguez, the young Taekwondo dude. Again, like, you know what I mean? If you can't get him down, you're going to be getting silly kicked all night long.
Yeah,
with some creative shit.
And I mean, a lot of
throwing his hands up.
Yeah,
like, I don't think a lot of these guys are spending valuable training camp time being like, all right, let me learn how to defend this like spinning heel windmill Taekwondo kick.
Yeah.
Where they haven't seen it ever, because they probably came up in that standard MMA system now where it's just like, all right, they're going to throw leg kicks, they're going to throw some roundhouses to the body, maybe a head kick every now and again, but primarily it's going to be a boxing game. I mean, even leg kicks, Rogan's talking about it all the time on the commentary. Like, you just don't see the volume of leg kicks anymore because these guys fall in love with boxing.
Yeah.
They just want to get close. They, you know, they, to what you said, it's addicting to knock somebody out with your hands. I can't imagine not returning to that once you've been successful in that regard.
That's why it's good to, it's always fun to watch the champs, right? Because they have a different level of doing all the right things.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, even if it's for their particular specialty. So you watch, Tyron Woodley, he doesn't throw that many kicks.
Nope.
But the ones he throws matter. You know what I mean? And it's like, or Conor McGregor, he's not even known for kicks, but he probably throws more kicks than punches in his fights.
Yeah.
And the kicks are setting up those left hands from space that he throws.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're hard.
Woodley, too, is really taking the element of strategy within fights to another level. I mean,
because he can.
He's just, I personally, he's been asked to coach a lot of other fighters. And I think it's because him and Greg Jackson are probably the two guys you'd most quickly think of in terms of how to break a guy down and figure out what might be the best game plan to beat him. Because, I mean, look at what he did to Wonderboy. Wonderboy has basically starched everyone he's fought, but yet he goes up against Woodley and all of his game plans, all of his kicks and unorthodox punches, they just grind to a halt because Woodley is almost like, in a way, the Mayweather of his weight class, and that, like, he's going to take away the first option. So if you can beat him, you're going to beat him with doing something that's not your first preference. So, you know, if he's going up against a strike, look at Darren Till even. I mean, I showed you the weigh-in photo. I mean, he was an enormous dude, but he just measured that distance. He selected to fight at a distance that all of his weapons worked and none of Till's worked. And it was, I mean, I, was that even... Did that get to the second round?
It did. It was like early second round. But he's not many people are able to use their speed as a weapon. Hmm. Like for a lot of people, it's just like a feature.
Yeah.
Like they never really can like hone the, because some people have like a natural, like are just like naturally on a different level of speed.
Yeah.
And but they, that doesn't, for some people, it never matters.
Yeah.
Melvin Gallard. It never mattered that he was faster than everybody. He couldn't put it all together for whatever reason. Like it's.
There's a lot of those guys who you look back at their career and just wonder how in fuck were they never a champion? I'd say that even Josh Thompson, like he's a guy who's been around forever. I'm pretty sure he's held every belt in every organization with the exception of the UFC. And just, was never able to put together that. And I think marketing is a component of that too.
Timing, marketing. You know, freak athletes. You know, it's there's a lot of things that, but back to those guys, they're just like their strategies are pretty sick. And then you got Conor McGregor. So I like the way he uses his right arm, the frame before he throws the left. Yeah, you know,
he's always
what I mean?
Pawing.
Yeah, it's kind of sick. Because it's like if they were wearing a gi, he'd be grabbing it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he's figured out a way to control the leverage with a closed fist on the shoulder. Like he's not just pawing, he's controlling their leverage. He's affecting the way they can turn into a punch. He's like how I said before, like I'm always pressuring up. He's feeling everywhere they're moving.
Yeah.
Because he's holding on to them. They can't get out of his like locked in target, you know? They can't get out of it.
I think the thing with Conor too, man, is like never has there been somebody who, he really is lightning in a bottle, because never has there been somebody who has talked such copious amounts of shit, and not even like normal shit talking, but like ridiculous shit talking, like I'm going to knock him out in the first round and the first 30 seconds, but then proceeds to actually do it a majority of the time. So, I mean, honest to goodness, I think a majority of his career, like most good careers, are a little bit, you know, luck certainly has something to do with it.
Yeah.
I think that if him and Aldo were to fight 10 times, that never happens again.
I think it happens 7 out of 10 times.
You think so?
Hell yeah.
Just because of...
Hell yeah.
Also, too, it's unfortunate, it's hard not to acknowledge Aldo's physique in that fight versus in some of his most recent fights prior to that.
Dude, I don't care what kind of training camp you give Aldo.
Yeah.
Dude, they're just like, they're different types of strikers, man. It's not going to happen. It's just not going to happen for Aldo. He's got... So here are the things that me and my wife we pay attention to when we decide whether or not this person is going to be a champion, right? Disproportionately long arms,
yeah,
right. That's super important. Athletic ability, super important. Smoothness of movement,
yeah.
Those are the only three things that matter.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, like, of course, like, dedication, grit, and all that stuff, but, like, you wouldn't be there.
They're not in the UFC training 7 days a week.
It's like, who would be the better dancer of the two? Who would, not like, who would know how to do the moves better, but who would you rather watch?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Who's like, more fluid?
That's going to be the champion. Yeah. And that's, like, and that's why, so for example, I think Bisbing is more fluid of a dancer than George St. Pierre, right? However, George St. Pierre has like athletic gifts that will allow him to do dance things that Bisbing couldn't do.
Yeah.
And so he could outshine Bisbing as the least fluid dancer because of his athletic gifts. And that's what happened in the fight.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, and that's why I don't think George St. Pierre wants to fight Tyron Woodley.
No.
You know, like, I think he'll struggle with Conor McGregor at any weight. You know, he needs to fight other stiff power guys.
Yeah.
You know, to
like he was able to for 5 years.
Yeah.
We find some more. Resurrect Carlos Condit. Let's get him back in there.
Yeah, but he can't. I don't think he can dance.
No.
I don't think he's not smooth. He's athletic. He has disproportionately long arms, but he's just not. He doesn't. You know, he can't do the. You know. Well, I'm trying to think of a style of dance. Like, you wouldn't want to watch him ballroom dance.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, but those people, it's just your ability to react has a lot to do with your smoothness. Because if you're smooth when you're reacting, you're just reacting. If you're stiff, you have to first get into a position to act. Then you react. It's just, there's just two different... It's just the speed is different now.
Well, it's like with your Bisping comparison. It's their base sort of striking. It's Bisping is a lot more smooth within that realm, but yet GSP has access to a range of techniques that he simply doesn't, because he's not. Bisping's probably one of the worst athletes in the UFC.
Absolutely, hands down.
Yeah, he's just
hands down.
But he does have that fluidity of his motion.
Yes.
Until it becomes a time of, okay, well, he can't match that energy because he's not that sort of athlete that a GSP is.
Yeah,
or that And also, too, man, I think GSP, it's a really difficult kind of career to, it's just like any other career where we talk about the greatness of like Joe Montana and like, oh man, what if he played in the modern day? I'm of the opinion that like nothing really gets, especially within the realm of athletics, we're not getting worse in any qualities. Nutrition, sports science is getting better, nutrition is getting better, training is getting better, and philosophy behind the sports is only, getting sharper. So I think that GSP is absolutely a tremendous fighter, but he better be careful coming back into the fold because there's money in the UFC now. Like, he's fighting actual athletes, not just guys who were like, I got my black belt like 5-10 years ago. I can get in shape, take a couple of fights, make some money.
I think he was smart about it. I think now that he's in a position where he can just pick the fights he wants.
Yeah.
I mean, he was smart about that. He was like, no, Bisbing. Before he even got out, give me Bisbing.
I'll fight him. Yeah.
You know, and that almost didn't go well for him.
Yeah.
Almost didn't go well for him. So it was, he was smart about that.
I think, honestly, the future, we've have this kind of hypothesis, Rick and I, that we've talked about a couple times in this show, so I'd like to get your opinion on it, and that just the future of the UFC in general, I think they have two options. I think they really kind of go the traditional sports league route, and one of the main features of that is the rankings, right? On the other side, we have the WWE route, where the rankings are bullshit. We change the rankings to suit our marketing needs at any time. They really don't mean much of anything.
Yeah.
And we might get, say like a CM Punk fight every now and again, which is kind of the negative quality of this idea. Yeah. We're also going to get fights that overall are just more exciting because you know what? Sometimes the number 7 guy in the world is a better fight for the champion monetarily than is the number 2 ranked guy in the world. Yeah. You know, back to our Carlos Condit example. No one ever wanted to buy a pay-per-view because Carlos Condit was on it.
Yeah.
So I think that, they really do have a choice to make. And I think that ultimately it's going to be decided by whether or not they replace Dana.
Yeah.
But in general, like what of those two business models, if you were Dana White for a day, are you going the WWE route or are you going, let's call it the NFL NBA route?
Well, here's the thing. I feel like they're sitting in a sweet spot where they don't have to pick a lane because they have fighting commissions.
Yeah.
That handle the rankings for them. So I don't know if you remember, there was So when Khabib was supposed to fight
in Madison
Square Garden,
Iaquinta.
He fought Iaquinta,
right? Yeah.
Paul Felder stepped in before that.
Yeah. But they wouldn't let him fight.
They wouldn't let him fight because he wasn't ranked high enough.
Which is just such.
But I mean, but they, but that was out of the UFC's hands. They didn't have to take care of that. And then, and that way, we didn't end up with a WEC or what is it, WWE.
Because
of that, we didn't end up with a WWE type situation.
Yeah,
you know, it was still a sport. It was still a dude. And Iaquinta, he might be able to get Khabib on a good, you know, with training camp.
Like that, he's a badass real estate agent.
Yeah, he's a maniac. But that's so I feel like they're in a sweet spot where they can market in a way that pours in the money, and then they have somebody else taking care of the credibility of them being a sport.
Yeah,
I feel like that at this point we really have. I listen a lot to Brendan Schaub. And I think he's kind of a hot take artist on some level, but I really do like a lot of his takes on the corporate structure of the UFC.
Yeah.
Where, like, we've really reached a point where this is like a multi-billion-dollar organization, and I just do not buy that Dana White is in any way qualified to run a multi-billion-dollar operation. Like, it's great if you him on.
Yeah.
This is true.
What is? Like, it's a multi-billion. 1 billion. What about 500 million? What about a $200 million company? Yeah. What about a $1 million a year company? Who's qualified for this? Oof. You know?
It's a very good question.
So you say, how is he? He's running it. He's not. He's the face of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, he has corporate offices. He has corporate, you know, it's like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He seems like he's handling it better than most people would.
My thing is that I just dislike about the way he manages is like the personal grudges with the fighters. Like when you look at Woodley, like he actively has acknowledged that he is not a fan of Tyron Woodley. He wants him to lose and has basically averted his opportunities to get these big money fights because he doesn't want him to get a big money fight because he just personally dislikes him.
In a way, isn't that kind of a Vince McMahon move?
It is.
Like, isn't he kind of, kind of have to wonder is how much of Dana's decision making is like Dana's decision making and how much of it is like Sydney was saying, the corporate office saying, well, Tyron Woodley is hard to sell, like he's a good fighter, but we need to, oh, well, I'll just go and say like I'm not on it, like I'm not a fan and everybody doesn't like me already, so they'll take his side.
Dana's for sure only present in the WWE business model option, or at least some semblance of that.
We were saying a few episodes ago that he's kind of like the kingpin. That's his role. Like he needs to start wearing a pinstripe suit.
His whole entire MO this whole entire time was that he says whatever he wants.
Yeah.
He says whatever the fuck you want. So you can say on one hand it's unprofessional that he's doing that with Tyron Woodley, but is it if it's making him money?
Yeah.
You know, because it's only unprofessional when it stops being something that makes the company money.
Yeah.
So it's the fight game. It's not the professionalism in the fight game isn't the same as professionalism anywhere else because at the end of the day, we can punch each other in the face.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So
quite true. Quite true.
It's a little bit, men talk to each other differently under circumstances where we can settle this like men.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know. I don't know how I feel about it because you know that in a company you can't keep every employee happy even if the company's doing well.
Yeah.
Some people are going to be upset about their position in the company.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, you know, these complaints get ignored. So would you rather be ignored or have your boss say, I don't fucking like you? You know, because Tyron Woodley still with the company. He's still making money.
Yep.
So would you rather just, I don't know. I wouldn't mind it.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think I would mind it so much because at least Tyron Woodley knows where he stands.
And perhaps Dana's crazy like a fox. Maybe he's telling these guys like, listen, I'm a target. If you can't come up with adequate marketing ideas, shit on me.
Yeah.
Just, you know.
I mean, just look at the press conference for Conor Khabib. Like Connor coming out in the Joker suit with his bottle of whiskey, like
giving Dana a shot.
How much do you think Dana knew that's what was coming?
Yeah,
like when he said, like, hey, is it a sponsor of the fight? Is it a sponsor? Yes, it is. Like he
still kind of
knew where that was going.
That Dana knew that something was happening the day of the bus thing. I don't think he knew that it was going to result in a couple of his fighters getting glass in their eyes, but he absolutely knew Connor and his gang of hooligans were coming to cause some trouble.
Well,
I don't think he just knew what the nature of the trouble was going to be.
Well, we all knew, right? Like, kind of like...
What the hell else is there
to do? Slap happened and he was like... You know, he put up the tweet, was like, get the plane, get the jet ready.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then, like, he gets there. I don't care who he is. You don't just walk into Madison Square Garden, into where the buses are. You got a clearance check here, clearance check. Like, he's, you know, enough times where, like, he was, like, Dana White clearly knew. He was in the building, you know, that stuff. He had to get past so many... Like, he wasn't supposed to be there. He wasn't scared to be there. He didn't have tickets to be there. Your face isn't a ticket. You still got to go through security.
Yeah.
You know? So it's,
There was a couple of guys. Well, supposedly the, and then their UFC's cover up was, it was the MacLife guys, because they're, I guess, officially credentialed.
Yeah.
So they opened the doors for him. But as you said, I mean, you literally, I don't care if they opened the doors. How the fuck did he get into the building?
Yeah.
You know, like, it's an official event. As you've said, you need tickets for it. You can't just walk on in. I mean, I guess.
Although they said, didn't he have like 40 people with him or something like that? Like, I know that's what Khabib was saying, but it was a lot.
Four. I mean, like, he got four people. If he got four people into the building, that's a lot.
But what I'm saying is, like, there's also that element where, like, they see Conor, like, are you supposed to be? And then he starts going, and then they start asking questions, and then there's just kind of like, he probably showed up with like 200, and then they just like filtered off.
Showed up with Ireland. Nice.
Yeah. Like, it's quite possible that this wasn't planned, but, like, I think Dana is, at this point, just, like, rolls with the punches as they come. Like, after everything he's had to deal with guys like Tito, like, he knows what to expect from fighters.
I still want him to fight Tito. I thought that was a great matchup.
Isn't that still up in the air?
I hope not. Dana would get crushed. I was like, I hoped he fought him back then, because sometimes, like, he's... need to know where you stand as a man.
Yeah.
And I felt like Dana's kind of believing the I don't want to call it false respect, because there is a true respect in watching a man build something with his own hands. And this idea, blah, blah, blah. Dana was the face of it. He organized, he put that together, he built that with his own hands. So I don't feel like people have a false respect for him. I mean, you can absolutely respect him. Like, you respect what he did. But people don't fear him.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And there's a very thin line between respect and fear, and it's really hard to tell the difference. And I don't think he knows the difference anymore. I think he actually thinks he can handle himself with some of these guys.
He's believing his own bullshit.
One of the did you guys watch that Conor McGregor series? It was like a three-part series, I think it was. It was like on the rise of Conor McGregor.
It's on
YouTube.
Okay.
It's on the UFC YouTube page. Yeah. And you can see, like, they knew he was going to be a megastar coming in. Like, he was gifted, and he was, like, way before his fight with Jose Aldo, he was already having like big business meetings with Dana White about these ridiculous contracts that he was getting. So, like, with the Diego Brandão fight, like, he was in Dana's ear before that, getting ridiculous contracts.
He was headlining fight nights, I think, his first fight in the UFC.
Yeah. So you could see there's this one scene where they have Conor McGregor come to the UFC offices, the headquarters, and Dana's in there, and you can see that he's about to go into this spiel that he does when these iconic fighters come in, but they still kind of show respect.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And he was going to go into that and do his thing. And Conor, he just wasn't even considering Dana's shit. You know what I mean? Like, Conor's like, I'm here for me. I'm here to put my feet up on your desk. Like, I'm just like... And you can see it. You can see, like, Dana White realizing, holy shit, this is a whole other thing I'm dealing with.
Yeah.
Like, this is an equal. you know what I mean? This is like a,
he wants my job.
That's what he said.
Yeah.
In that meeting, Conor was like, I'm going to have an office next door in a minute. Like, I'm going to be owning this shit. I'm going to own the UFC.
Which I think that's going to be awesome, that when that day finally comes, like, and he's going to dress exactly the same, but it'll be like in his 40s, like, announcing the fighters as they come out for the weigh-ins.
And what's so crazy about the entire thing to me is that if you were to say previous to his career taking off. Like, yes, Conor McGregor is a very good, well, you know, especially a striker. He's a very gifted striker. But would you have, would I personally have expected him to, I mean, his resume is fucking amazing. Mm-hmm. I mean, even that win over Max Holloway now, I mean, wow. I mean, that is about as high quality of a win in the UFC as you can get.
Yeah.
If you look over the, he has not had an easy route to start.
They tried to shut him up.
Yeah,
I mean, they were trying to shut him up. They did their best,
and
to
he's
shut
still
him
standing.
Yeah.
I would not have expected that. I did not expect him. I thought that he would have a great career, but I thought he was one of those guys that once he got to the top, he would inevitably falter. He would lose to the real upper echelon guys, and that would be it. We'd remember him as, oh man, like, wasn't he fun? Like, almost like a Chael-esque. He was the striking version of Chael, basically. But
he
showed up.
That's it.
He moved differently. He targets differently. Mm. Like, so Anderson Silva was the first person that made fighting look like the movies.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. When he fought, like, who was it? When he first came into UFC and he fought the dude with the big red hair, the redhead.
Oh, Lieben.
Lieben, yeah. Mm. Dude, that was some shit right there. Yeah. That was like, I mean, really, that looked similar to what Conor McGregor did to Alvarez.
Yeah.
With that pinpoint accurate striking that was just like, I mean, he hit him with everything he threw. He had nearly a 100% strike percentage in that fight.
The Forrest Griffin fight?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just insane shit. So like, you see,
and his facial expressions, that's where it really, like, the adding the movie side of it is like, what?
Yeah. Oh, Forrest's facial expressions of just knowing that there's no universe where he's ever going to be able to stand with this guy.
So that was like, that fight was interesting because it was like, that was our first introduction into like the next level. So we got movie version of fighting, and then that fight was the anime version of fighting. You know what I mean? Where like you can see their energy forces and you can see one grow big and whatever. So like, When Conor steps into the ring, it's like there's like stillness. No matter what he's doing, there's like a different energy when he steps into the ring. So I felt like he, and you can feel that with people. Like it just like he was special right away. You know, like right away it was just the way he advances towards people. It just feels so different than the way other fighters. And you can feel with all the champs or all these upper level people. So the Valentina Shevchenko.
Yeah.
She's a perfect example. Dude, when she steps into the ring, it's just like, holy fuck, what is going to happen? Like, what is she going to do to that human? No matter who it is. And it's, so Conor had that. And I don't feel like that's not just like a perception. That's something that comes out of the person who has mastered something, you know? And it was, I didn't know what it was, but it was like, I knew there was something special to that guy, you know?
Like, there is something to be said. I know he kind of has like this whole, like the secret thing going on where he just talks about like, if he says it enough, it tends to just realize itself.
Yeah.
But I mean, there is something to the mentality that he has taken, and there's something to the mentality that he puts his opponent in of just constantly hearing, like, you are going to get knocked out in the first round. Yeah. Like, I'm going to bounce your head off the canvas. I'm going to knock you out.
Psychological game is, that's a whole other level.
Yes.
Like, he knows, like, the stuff he was pulling out against Khabib in the press conference, like, referencing, like, soldiers in Dagestan, and, like, like, he knew, and even though, like, Khabib did a good job of, like, not, like, keeping his poker face and not trying not to let it get to him, and the way he would like kind of just like talk over whatever Conor was saying, but you know, on some level, like, as much composure as he's keeping, he's remembering that.
And it seems simplistic. Like, it's not like he's literally just talking shit and he's being overly confident. Like, it seems like a relatively simplistic approach.
Yeah.
But yet it seems to work.
He also so Conor, he puts people in a position of denial while he doesn't have to. So they're constantly trying to deny that he's having any effect on them at all. If they say anything that bothers him, he'll acknowledge that it bothers him in whatever way he does, and then dumps on them more.
Yeah.
So like, once he acknowledges it, now he's free of the effects of it.
Yeah.
while you're still reeling over the fact that you're trying to deny that the first thing he did is affecting you. Now he's going to the next level. It's just like, yeah, I mean, it's the people, like you just don't see him doing the same thing. It's interesting. It's like an application of like sacred knowledge in martial arts, yeah. You know?
Yeah.
So he's using so many different, like, ancient traditions, whether it's like from the way he fights to the way that he handles people, you know, with the talking.
Yeah.
He's just like, he seems like learned in this tradition, which is why I think I love him, because, so, you know, I have a degree in economics, but my interest, my passion of study is cultures, and more specifically warrior cultures, right? So this guy, he's like an ancient fucking warrior. Like, he's only a warrior, and it's like, it's not all the time that these warriors would get this like exuberant wealth that he's been able to amass, but it's like, I don't think he's changed much. you know what I mean?
Not at all. Like,
dude, he's still about destroying faces. I love it. I love watching this. I feel like I'm seeing something, like something truly ancient in modern times.
And he seems to your point about him not changing that much. I mean, even like, you don't really, obviously the bus thing, and you hear a little bit about like he's got into a, but when you do hear about him, it's something that seems entirely believable,
yeah,
relative to the character he portrays. Like, he's getting in a fight with a mobster in a Dublin bar. Like, okay, yeah, yep, that sounds, yeah, that sounds about right. Yep.
If he was still an electrician and he heard that story, he's still going to come throw something at your, yeah, car.
100%. 100%.
And the other thing about him too is that he seems to be keeping his shit together. I mean, it's like everyone has said, he really hasn't spent much of the money. You know, he puts a lot of stuff on Instagram. Most of it's just rented. You know, it's just something he's doing for fun, yeah, that day. But like, his focus has not gone on, oh my God, I'm so wealthy, I'm just going to, you know, find a way to fuck this whole thing up. It's still on smashing faces.
It can't, because he's like, he tapped into something where, you know, like that level of sacred knowledge where it's like, you don't just do something, you have to be something. Like, he is fight now.
Yeah.
You,
yeah,
know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's he is, and I mean, that's, again, it's like, you know, what I, of course, am trying to do with, you know, like, comedy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you look at people who, and then, you know, I get so, you're not necessarily envious, but it's like, you know, like everything in my life that I've ever gotten is because I was advanced at a young age. Like, I was like gifted at a young age. I was like, it was just like, I always, everything came from having awareness. You know, like, I didn't luck into anything. It was like, I knew the steps that I was taking to get the things that I was getting, every, like, hands down, every time. So you watch people come in to comedy and they just have this like this ability to just be comedy.
Yeah.
You know, for whatever lack of awareness that is causing it. And it's just like, what the fuck?
Yeah. Yeah. How did you do that?
Yeah, but that might be the only thing they can do. You know, in the, you know, and then there's other things that they're gonna have to master, you know, whatever. But it's like, it's rare. It's very rare that somebody can come in, they can be comedy and actually also be talented at comedy and do it and progress. So yeah, some people come in, like, they be comedy and they're out of it. And you're, yeah, like, oh man, if they could have stuck around.
Yeah.
You know what,
yeah,
I mean? So, but yeah, I mean, that's what I'm trying to make sure that is what I don't want to be stepping out of, in and out of these things that I'm trying to master. So like, I don't want to be trying to step out in and out of being, you know, father or being husband or being protector or whatever. It's like, I want to be able to just exist as comedy in every component, no matter what it is that I'm doing, you know, and it's, I like that challenge, you know, wherever it's taken me, you know, I've liked it so far, you know, it's, so yeah, that's, I mean, I guess that's what I take from watching all. Because, I mean, so I was talking to somebody the other day, and he was talking, oh, it's so hard to be a comedian. It's like, what you do is so amazing. It's like, not really.
Yeah.
It's like, what I am is I'm just like a thrill seeker that can't fight and isn't brave. Do you know what I mean? But I'm like, I'm still an adrenaline junk, so I need, yeah. So it's not hard for me. It's like,
it's time for this to happen.
Yeah.
I must go.
Exactly. Yeah. So, but it's like, I'm trying to like, you know, just like spread that umbrella, you know. It's like, it's all I think about. It's all I think about is mastering shit.
Well, like, you saying that kind of made me think of an analogy may have mentioned on here before, but prior to him ruining his reputation, I was a big fan of Chip Kelly, because I like the fact that he was such a non-traditional thinker in a very traditional sport.
Yeah.
And he was trying to take a new approach to things. It didn't work. But still, I appreciated the willingness to think outside the box at first. And he Absolutely. Was obsessed with practice, which, you know, surprise, surprise, football coach is obsessed with practice.
Yeah.
Not really news. But when he went on about practice, he talked about how the team itself was just an accumulation of practices.
Yeah.
Like, that's what the team was. And then when they were trying to install some different component to, like, the red zone offense. And they were like, well, Chip, how are you going to get it in there? He's like, well, it's really only going to make a difference in the team if we're able to get it into practice.
Yeah.
And he's like, and I personally, just the way we're going right now, I don't see a place to fit it into practice. And I kind of tried to take that element in terms of just being generally productive and trying to be successful in life. Like, every day is practice.
Yeah.
And you are an accumulation of those practices. So, you know, to your point, like, if you're trying to master four skills, five skills, five qualities, whatever it may be, you have to build those into practice every single day.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's another humbling thing, is there's not a lot you can master. Like, we just don't have enough time. So as you know, we go on, you've identified your four to five things that are in your practice.
Yeah.
And, you know, comedy. And
life revolves around all of those things.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And even if you know, like, while you're being a dad, like, you're still like, you're still kind of existing within that comedy sphere because you're practicing all the time. Like, maybe there's material you can glean from your interaction with your kid or something.
We have a very lighthearted house.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're all martial artists as well. You know,
that's badass.
And, yeah. And we're all like family oriented. So it's, yeah, my life revolves around family, comedy, and martial arts. That's it.
That's a good trifecta.
That's it. I don't need anything else. I don't need you fucking friends. Like, I don't. And it's like, cause so Rick knows that, like, I get like some shit from the comedy scene, and I kind of like take it in stride. I don't really care. And it's like, well, why is that? Is it because I have my three things?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? They can't, like, nobody can take that away from me.
You'd have to fit them into practice.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Dude, it's like, and I don't have time to fit my concern with people who won't even acknowledge that discipline is a requisite for being a respectable human being. I have no time for you.
No.
I have no time for you. I have no time for people who scoff at the idea of duty and honor. Like, I don't, as a matter of fact, not only do I have no time for you, but as a man, I don't trust you. If you scoff at the idea of duty and honor, if you scoff at the idea of like living by a code, as a man in 2018, dude, you disgust me. Like, I mean that from the bottom of the heart. Like, I have no time for that type of person. You and I will never see life the same way, ever, as long as you feel that that is the case. So I don't envy people that are trying, that are making such an effort to try to manipulate the truth of my actions into these lies that you're trying to make them. Dude, imagine what the fuck effort that is.
Yeah.
Like seriously, like even if I wasn't like, oh, this is going to sound very egotistical because I wanted to, but it's like, but dude, could you just imagine the effort it takes to make me into a bad person?
No.
Like, that's insane. It just must take all of their creative time. Like, what are your new jokes? Do you know what I mean? I couldn't imagine you having creative time to write new jokes and make me a misogynist.
Yeah.
Like, that doesn't make any sense. You had to put
this entire thing together.
Yeah, it's like, this equals this and this equals that. It's like, dude, when are you done with that with me to write jokes?
Yeah.
You know, so, like, I don't envy that path in any way, shape, or form. So it's like I'm good with. As a matter of fact, I prefer for, and I used to not, and I'm kind of stepping into this more recently, but it's like, I almost prefer for them to be that way, because then I get to prove my dedication to my lifestyle and build self-esteem with minimal effort. Do you know what I mean? It's like, it takes minimal effort to ignore those losers.
Yeah.
And then I get to feel like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm sitting in Lotus hovering above them, and all I did was just ignore the bullshit. Yeah. I like it. Like, so I'm kind of like, I didn't used to feel that way about it, because I'm a human. I want to be loved, and I want to be loved. And when you want to be loved, you want people to feel loved by you. And then if people feel loved by you, they will want to love you as well. So it was like finding, like, feeling all these people trying to say these bad things. It's like, am I not loving properly?
Yeah.
Like, how am I not being compassionate? Like, what am I not doing enough that is making this happen to me? And I would take it very personally, because, like, it's clearly something I'm doing that is giving them, not making them do this, but I'm opening up something that makes them feel like it's okay that they can do this to me. Do you know what I mean? Like, for example, like, they're not trying to punch me in the face. Why is that? Because they know they can't do that to me. Because they know, you know what I mean? But I'm somehow leaving it open that, yes, come shit on me. Yes, come, you know, do this to me. And I was taking it very badly. Not in a sense where it was making me angry, but it was just like, it's saddening. It's embarrassing.
Yeah.
Because these are the people that I deal with, right? My wife knows that I'm a comedian. Of course, it's not a secret to her. She knows I'm a comedian, right? So, but like, and now I can't talk about my comedy community with her because I'm embarrassed about my comedy community. They are fucking embarrassing. Yeah. They're embarrassing. You know what I mean? And it's like, I don't... it's
when
like
you get that, like, so what's it like to a comedy? It's so much fun.
Comedy's great, but my comedy family sucks. But that's something I had to also wrap my head around, because I'm like, my family life growing up wasn't that great, and I'm able to look at my family and compartmentalize and did all this stuff. But then it was like, with comedy, it was different, because I thought we had these like-minded artists and all, but it's like, nah, they're fucking people too, man. And it's this is recent for me. Like, this is like, you know, I would say, like, within the last like year or year and a half or so, that's been able to be the case. But like,
if I can like, it's kind of like you are on this journey of like mastering yourself and your abilities and everything, and like, that is your focus, and that is what you're surrounded by people who have no interest in mastering themselves, but think they can master everything else without doing that work first.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And it's, you know, and what I need to do is like, kind of like step back and like just recognize them where they are on their journey, because you can't, and it's just so funny. It's just like, you can try to skip steps, right? You can try to skip steps, but eventually you're going to learn that you have to go back to the beginning.
Yeah.
You know, and so I know that all of these people that are making this effort to try to disparage me and make me out to be these negative things, like, they're going to have to go back to the beginning on what it means to be a good person.
Yeah.
And that's not going to be a fun time, I don't think, you know?
Well, because, and a lot of it is that they're having this contrary view on both sides, where, like, in their own head, they may think of things one way. Like, are you actually practicing that?
Yeah.
Is that what you're actually thinking about?
Or? Yeah. And I had this thing, and I thought about whether or not I would say it, because, like, I don't want to, like, talk about people behind their back. But I think that if she just happened, I'm not going to say her name, but if she happened to hear this, she would know that I'm talking about her. And I think that this would be useful, right?
Yeah.
Because, we get to ages, right? So I know we know a mutual comedian friend who, when she was, she talks about this openly. I'm not giving her information out, you know. When she was in a relationship, when she was like 14, 15, 16, she was in a relationship with like a 30-something-year-old person. And she keeps trying to wear that as a badge of honor. Like, it meant something. It's like, no, you were taken advantage of.
Yeah.
Like, that was a terrible thing. And it's like, now that, and then she's trying to say that she wasn't taken advantage of, it was her choice, I get, even if it was your choice, that person was seriously flawed.
Yeah.
Seriously flawed.
You were not presented with a fair choice.
Not at all. Like, and now she's getting to the age, if not already at the age, of that person. Mm-hmm. Right? And it's like, homegirl, you got to admit that that was wrong. Yeah. Admit that that was wrong, because like, that's a hang up for you.
Yeah.
Now, because the cognitive dissonance is too strong. Right. And then after that, you have to forgive your, and she was raised by a single mother. She's very open about that. You got to forgive your mother for, you know, giving you whatever she gave you to make you think that that was okay.
Yeah.
You know, forgive all that shit. Like, you're putting in a lot of effort into this craft, and you still have so much anger and frustration, and not everybody can like function and grow with anger in them. Like, I know for one, I can't. Like, I cannot progress at something as an angry person. Yeah. Some people seem to be like angry and crushing it. Like, for what? Like, it fuels them.
Yeah.
It's not for everybody, man.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
like, you need to get rid of your anger.
Like, and it seems like for the people who do that, inevitably, no matter how far they go, that crash happens. And the longer it goes without happening, the bigger it is.
It seems to. I mean, but it's like, it's also some people angry, succeed, and die. And, you know, just like
die angry.
Yeah, exactly. And like, never had that crash. You know what I mean? And like, live to old age. So it's like, you can't judge it by that either. It's just like, do you want to live that angry life? Like, do you want to live that angry life? Like, do you want to be toiling at this craft of stand-up comedy, and then every single set you do has been the exact same since the moment you start? Like, it's like, how is there no progression? It's like, well, you're putting in the effort, you're smart, you're in the way somehow. How are you in the way? Well, you're clearly angry.
Yeah.
You clearly have a lot of like frustration, and you're like, I mean, I don't like to get into anybody's chemical habits too much, right? You know, you know, but it's like, I mean, come on.
Yeah.
You're unsafe drinking on a very regular basis. It's like, you're self-medicating. Deal with that shit.
Yeah.
Like, be the actual like icon in this comedy scene that the amount of time that you've been around says you should be.
Yeah.
Right?
It sounds like you're talking specifically to me.
Well, no, but it's like, I take it.
Yeah.
I'm talking very specifically to somebody else.
Yeah.
Very specifically to her.
Yeah.
Right? But like, take it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because like, your trauma's in your way too. Yeah. You not forgiving your mom is in your way too. Like, you not forgiving your fucking bullies and shit, that's in your way, man. Like, whatever your childhood trauma is, like, dude, I mean, I was living with my abusers. You know what I mean? It's like, whatever, like, I didn't get bullied by anybody outside of my house. And especially in high school, you know what I mean? It's like, people knew better. And I wasn't even like an angry person. I was still like for my senior superlative, I was the biggest flirt. I was like, and it was only because somebody else got funniest. And that was like, he fucking always quoted movies and shit. He wasn't funny. He wasn't funny. He just quoted funny movies. But
it's always that.
None of it was unique. God damn it.
It's always that guy.
So, but yeah, it was like, you know what I mean? But it's like, I can't be the dad I want to be if I'm angry.
Yeah.
I can't be the dad I want to be if I have anger towards anybody who has ever done me harm in my childhood. Because, like, dude, being a dad is just nonstop frustrating. There's so many things testing and trying your patience. If my patience and frustration is already tried because of the lie that I'm telling myself that I'm okay.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I'm not going to have any patience left over to let my sons and daughters explore and make mistakes.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the same thing with my relationship with my wife. Like, there has to be room for her to frustrate me and for us to be able to deal with that together and learn, because that's where growth happens.
Yeah.
So it's like, I can't deal with, you know, any, dude, I see the types of shit that couples fight about, and I'm just like, thank God we fucking forgave her, because we both did. Like, we were at a point, because we're both athletes, we're both dedicated, and we were at a point where we realized that we loved each other, we realized that we wanted to continue with each other, but there was just so much like that we were lying to each other about, because we were self-medicating with like lifestyle choices that we couldn't progress, right? And it was like, well, we have to tell each other this. So we had this, we just told each other everything. And we were together for like 6 years at that point. Three of them were in college when we both had access to more self-destructive humans that we could, or more stuff that we could use to self-destruct, right?
Yeah.
So we revealed all the truth about all that stuff. And it was very cathartic, but it was like you're left over with like, well, I mean, me and you are good, you know, but why when I see my mom call, I get frustrated.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It doesn't even have to be a frustrating conversation. She'd just be calling to say hello.
Just the idea it's suddenly this whole train going.
You know, and then it would be the same thing with her dad and the same thing with my dad and the same thing with her mom. It's like, we fucking love these people.
Yeah.
What the hell is happening here? And it's like, well, you do love them, but you resent them as well.
Yeah.
You love them for all of the good things that they did for you, but you resent them for, you know, the weakness in them that you had to grow up seeing. Because we end up taking on that weakness, not realizing it, and project it forward.
Yeah.
So it's like, dude, if you wanna be free, you got to do. And this is something me and Anthony always say. It's like, do the hard thing. Right? Yeah. The hard thing is more than likely the right thing. So the easy thing is to say, I don't care what my childhood was like. I'm good. The hard thing is to go to your mom and say, for whatever thing that I blamed on you, I forgive you. It's not easy.
Yeah.
That's like, and I wasn't even... When I was doing it, it was like, there was a desperation to it, and nobody had really told us about it. And there was like some sacred knowledge shit that I read growing up that I felt maybe applied, but it was like going to do it, it was terrifying. I was more afraid to do that than any physical encounter I ever got with anybody. It was just terrifying. That was the closest that I think I ever got to having a panic attack. And I'm not a person, I don't, you know, and I've seen people get shot, like the shit that I grew up seeing and having to like calibrate from, like as far as fear is concerned. Like I don't, like the same things that don't scare me, you know, that like scare the average person. But it was like trembling, like that full, not even like the little trembles, but like the like, am I crying already? You know what I mean? And then it was like, as soon as I started saying it I could just feel... It's just something just being pulled out of me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it was just like, I could just feel the transition as soon as I was done the sentence.
Yeah.
It was just, it's the closest thing to real life magic that a human can experience is to forgive, forgive those who have done you harm and that harm is still affecting your life. There's nothing closer to a magical process that we can experience than that.
Yeah.
Other than childbirth, you know what I mean? But that's like, it's almost like the exact opposite. You know what I mean? It's like, it's crazy. It's crazy. So I'm like big on that, especially right now, because like I started listening to some people that are like big on forgiveness like recently. And then I'm like, holy fuck. That's what me and Ansley did that allowed us to be where we are now.
Yeah.
And that was huge for us to both do. And like it was almost in a selfish way because we were trying to have a good relationship with each other. But like that probably was the thing that, you know, cleared up a lot of space for just so I can start trying to master shit. You know, I'm really trying to master and really have an understanding of like how to master myself. It's just like, I used to think every dumb philosophical thing about anger that every idiot kid that hasn't forgiven anyone thinks, oh, anger is an emotion. We all have anger. It's just about managing it. And it's just like, it's not true. It's not true. Like you can get rid of it. So it's my thing right now. I'm like really big into that. Cause it's like, maybe if more people forgave their mothers, they'd leave me the fuck alone. you know? Like you said, you're not angry with me.
Yeah.
Like you had that anger before I came into your life. Yeah. Right? So it's like, you're going to have that anger. If I died.
Yeah. You're just going to shift that somewhere
to else. Somewhere else.
Yeah.
So it's clearly not me. So yeah. I just hope. It's just like, dude, and looking at like fucking, and like to throw it back to like Conor McGregor, like he ain't angry.
Yeah.
He seems like it, but he's not.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And he knows that. So what he's doing is he's given his opponents an area to take with him talking shit wise that is not going to bother him.
Yeah.
Like, but he makes it seem like it is going to like so they can say that like he's off balance. He's rattled. He's on tilt right now. The fame and money has gone to his head. Yeah. Well, he knows that the only thing that they can think about him is that the fame and money is going to his head. It's just like the same way with like when I'm dealing with a heckler. I try to make them say, well, you're not funny, so that the crowd will react to them.
Yeah.
Right? So it's just like, dude, he's just like, you know, taking, but you, again, when you're angry, you can't see any of these shit, any of these angles, any of this stuff. Right? So it's like, and now I need to just be not lazy. Right? So that's the area that I'm in now, is just like being not lazy, taking care of things before they become problems. Yeah.
I have a question for you related to two different components of the conversation we've had, very much related to what you were just discussing in terms of forgiveness and getting past things and also encountering people who have roadblocks that are preventing them from, whether it's mastery or just, you know, having better relationships or what have you, something's in the way and they need to overcome that thing. So I'm like the stereotypical, like, grew up in a farmhouse, had a great childhood, like, you know, had no experience with trauma. I know, right?
Congratulations.
Or really didn't, frankly, even know anybody, at least that I was aware of, who had experienced.
I would also like to say good job to your parents.
Yes. Yeah, they did a good job.
It's not easy to be good parents.
Yeah.
It's not easy to be good people. Good job to your parents.
It's a shout out to the parental units. But, so my question to you is, when I moved to Philadelphia, I started encountering people who had a lot of trauma in their background. I think it was just, you know, urban area. I'm from a rural area, just a larger swath of people I'm being introduced to. Met some people with, you know, trauma in their background. And my question to you is, you know, we talked about practice and incorporating things into practice. For those people who have those traumatic things or have those anxieties that are in their way and affecting them day in and day out, what are some things you can build into practice to eventually have those disappear or to get to that point where you're able to forgive the person? I mean, are you a believer in therapy or a believer in cognitive behavioral therapy? Or is it simply, could meditation be an effective tactic? Like, what have you, through your experience and just your opinions, like, what are some good things?
All of those things are absolutely effective ways to cope, right?
Mm-hmm.
And until we actually encounter and, you know, face on, like, fight our, like, and overcome our problems, we're just going to be coping on the way to that, right? So, which I'm not saying cope as a negative word, right? It's necessary,
yeah.
You know, because if you weren't coping on the way to that, like, you would be in the worst possible position. You'd be dead.
Yeah.
You know, so. Yeah, definitely. So it's weird though, because like you don't want to get too involved in Band-Aids, right? Because, you know, again, like some of these things you're going to have for after you, you know, encounter your problem head on and overcome it, you're going to have the skill of meditation. Like, that's still going to be useful.
Yeah.
Right. So, but it's not the end all be all to that. I mean, it's just that they're really, you got to look at the counterpart to these things, to these emotions, right? And so you can only like handle one with its counterpart. You can't, there's no other way you can do that. So yeah. you I think the easiest way to see kind of the counterpart is to like extrapolate something into the physical, right? And then see what you're doing physically. Right?
Yeah.
So, and then reverse it. And then that's how you get the counterpart, right? So you say, well, what is the opposite of laughter?
Is anger.
Crying.
There you go.
Right?
Yeah.
You can angry cry, though.
Exactly. That's true. So that's why the opposite of happiness isn't anger, it's sadness. You see how that works? Right? Gotcha. Mm-hmm. So you look at, where does anger go to its extreme?
Shouting.
That's not extreme enough. Maybe you needed a little more trauma.
Violence.
You know what I mean?
Violence. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So what is the opposite of violence?
Peace.
Forgiveness.
Okay.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's like,
for sure.
It's like the opposite. So the opposite action of like violence is almost like a hug, an embrace, even. Yeah. Right? So like that's forgiveness. So if you're angry, like you can only really overcome that with forgiveness. It's the only thing that overcomes forgiveness.
Gotcha.
You know, so it's.
And I'm understanding what you mean now. It's like don't pursue happiness because that's not the antithesis of what you are trying to defeat.
Exactly.
Exactly.
So it's it's definitely find ways to cope, but just don't become obsessed with them. I mean, just don't. They're not the solution. I mean, eventually you're going to have to, and it sucks too because it's like you start telling yourself intermittently, this would be a good time for forgiveness because it's like right at that point when you're about to that fucking that point of no return, that event horizon of self-destructive behavior. It was like, once I cross this, like it's gonna be a tough couple of months. you know what I mean? Like that's it. That's when your psyche's telling you like, we need to stop this now.
Yeah.
Or destroy again. You know. So it's like. Yeah, I mean, you. So, and again, I'm not a counselor. I'm not a therapist. I'm just like, you know, like anything that I feel like I have any experience saying as that can be applicable comes from either me experiencing it myself, or no, 100% me experiencing it myself, and then like learning through the martial arts. Like, that's really it, where it's like, where truth matters.
The Band-Aids can get you to a point where forgiveness is even remotely possible. Whereas without the Band-Aids, it's this cycle where forgiveness just gets further and further away.
Maybe.
Yeah.
But it's, who, I mean, again, like I try not to like, define what I'm going to say. Cause I'm definitely defining the problem. I'm definitely defining the solution. Right. But what I don't like to say like how it has to be.
Yeah.
Right. Because then, cause for me, like when I'm trying to do something, I have to break it down into steps.
Yeah.
You know? So it's like, well, how do I like, I'll master step one, master step two, master step three. Now I can do this thing.
Yeah.
Right. So if you tell people, well, you master step, you know, get this band-aid, then forgiveness. Well, who knows when they're going to be done with this Band-Aid to move on to the next Band-Aid? Who knows when they're going to... So just tell them forgiveness, because at any point you do that, you get the experience of it.
Yeah.
So tell them that, and then they'll figure out how to get there.
Yeah.
You know, so...
Because you have people who go to therapy and get better. Mm-hmm. Like they work through, they resolve their issues, they go for a span of time, and then eventually they forgive, and then they move on. Then you have other people who go to therapy, and it's another form of addiction. It's just that going every week, and I sit down for an hour, and I talk about how my day has been, and I feel great. I may still curl up in a ball and cry myself to sleep every Thursday night, but other than that, I'm doing great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think this has been helpful for me just because when I try to, I mean, I'm not a counselor either, but when I try to counsel these people to the best of my ability, you know, the common rebuttal I'll get is like, oh, well, what am I going to do? Go talk to somebody once a week and everything's going to get magically fucking better?
No, go talk to somebody once.
Yeah.
Go talk to one person once.
Yeah.
And yes, the magically better thing, yes.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, but then you're free to make life efforts that are necessary. Like, you're not being held back, and like, your vision is different, and then you start to see things differently, and you're like, oh, you know, like, not to get into this because I kind of got to go, but I hate to open this up because this almost needs to be concluded. But it's like, you don't even see what is oppression, what is said to be oppression, the same way, you know. And it's like, that cop didn't shoot that guy because that guy was black. That cop shot that guy because he didn't comply, and then it got to a position where he was afraid for his life, and he made a decision to go home to his family.
Yep.
You know, and it's like, come on, let's all forgive our parents so that we can live together. No. You know what I mean? Because it's like, that's what's in the way. Like, any black person that is ready to be like, every time a cop shoots a black person, it's racist. They're angry at their family. They're angry at their parents. They're angry people. Any white person that is like, anytime a cop shoots a black person, it's racist. Well, they're angry too. You know, any white person that's like, every time a black person gets shot by the cops, it's only their fault. Black people are terrible. Well, they're angry.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
for it's sure. Like, so we can't take these angry perspectives and try to make them true, right? It's insane. It's insane the way we're treating each other right now. It's insane the way, and it's like with this whole victim badge of honor that people get to wear, and like, I'm a victim. They're calling them survivors, is what they're calling it. That's the word for when life happens. You're a survivor. It's like, you're not just living.
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy. And it's like, well, people need something. We need something to pull us out of this, or this darkness, this sadness. We need these little, like, oh, I get to be a survivor, and you get to pity me a little bit, and I feel good about that. But then when I leave, it's like, then what?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, what? Well, here's what I'll do. I'll go to him and get pity from him. Yeah. You know what I mean? So it's like, it just becomes that. Then that's all people are doing, just bouncing around from person to person trying to get pity. And I don't even know how to talk to people anymore, because like, that's not how I function. You know what I mean? It's like most of the time I just want to tell people that they're being a coward. It's just like, dude. And it's like, not even because you're not facing your problem, but because you're trying to use me to fix it. It's like, dude, I don't give a shit about your problems. So you're not really it's like, it's the lies we tell ourselves. It's just insane.
And the interconnectivity of the day kind of makes that, you know, the place to get it. It is the place to get pity. Yeah. Whereas previously, and you know, generations past, it was, we don't have time to discuss this right now. We're gonna go make money so we can keep food on the table.
Dude,
whereas now it's just, let me go on Facebook and create an echo chamber where I could search for the pity that's really not going to solve much for me anyways.
It's just the effort to get pity in the past was so insane. So insane.
The victim mentality is something that I've encountered, you know, in my life, just with friends and or family. And it's funny how I couldn't see it growing up, but I must be reaching that level of adulthood where now I can see it very clearly.
See, I saw it growing up because I had to like succeed out of this environment where success, just the culture of the environment, is the antithesis to success. So I saw it, but I felt sorry for them, you know, and it was like, and now I'm at the age where I'm realizing that me feeling sorry for, and I'll speak more specifically about the black community. Me as a black person, me feeling sorry for the black community is keeping the black community exactly where it is. I'm not helping, because in order for me to get any success, I grew up in project housing. I grew up in government subsidized housing. In order for me to get any success, I had to first shed all of the fucking trappings of the negative culture around me, and then gravitate towards a positive culture, which ended up being judo. Like, that was and that's why it was so important to me. And that's why the martial arts is still important to me to this day, is because that was my first experience with a culture that was geared towards success. So, I can't pity people. I gotta tell them to fucking gear, orient yourself towards a culture that breeds success.
It was the first thing you built into practice that had a positive feedback loop.
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. And it was, and again, with like, it's just so cool to just get involved with martial art because you just see how quickly it applies to life.
Yeah.
You know, more than, I mean, you do that when you master anything, but like, it's true with a martial art.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It actually applies to life. Like, you can't, like, I'm very talented in pool, like billiards. Like, I mean, there's, I don't care who you are. Like, you're not going to beat me. I'm just really good. Like, especially, and I always tell people, you want to break. If this is your last chance for a shot. You understand what I'm saying? If you don't want to break, you don't want to win. So, you know, but and you can see, like, it deals with angles and stuff a lot. So you can be like, oh, pool is like life because of this, that, and the other. But you have to, like, really stretch it.
Yeah.
But martial arts, it's just like, nah, you don't have to stretch that shit. It's no. life.
Yeah.
Know, it's you dealing with life. So,
yeah.
But I'm sorry. I gotta get out of here.
No worries, my friend. Thank you for joining us.
Awesome. Absolutely. This was fun.
That was very, very excellent conversation. I enjoyed it very much. And you got to come back.
I definitely will.
You got
to
come back,
I like
man.
Talking to dude. You gave me a window seat.
Yeah, man. You get to glimpse upon the glory of South Philly here. Yeah. So. But thanks again, man.
Absolutely.
And we got a sock assist for you to take home. So.
Oh, shit. Oh, yeah. Is this for me?
Yeah, that's for you.
This will get used in my house. I'll give this, you know. Yeah.
Godspeed.